My name is Carrie Ginger and your host of the Biteable podcast, Know Better, Live Best. Today's guest is Dr. Kate Shanahan, a board-certified family physician on a mission to awaken us all to the idea that culinary arts represent a powerful body of nutrition. She is the author of Deep Nutrition, Why Your Genes Need Traditional Food. She has served as the director of the Los Angeles Lakers Pro Nutrition Program and currently works with professional athletes to optimize their metabolism for energy and performance. Listen as we discuss the four pillars of the optimal diet: fresh food, fermented and sprouted foods, meat cooked on the bone, and organ meats. Know Better, Live Best is dedicated to supporting food and health literacy in people of all ages. Our mission is to cut through the misinformation surrounding food, health, and nutrition because we believe that when people know better, they can make the right choices and live their best lives. We are presented by Biteable Foods. They use blockchain and Internet of Things technology to build traceable, transparent food systems because it shouldn't take an investigative journalist to find out where food comes from. Hello, I am here with Dr. Kate Shanahan. Hi, Dr. Kate. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for inviting me onto your podcast. Happy to be here.
Well, I told you earlier how excited I was because I've just been listening to all the podcasts you've been on, and I think you're part of that missing link I'm still searching for in my own health journey, because I know a lot of the listeners know that I basically suffer from probably what most people do, lots of inflammation and thinking I know what's healthy, but I'm still trying to piece those pieces together, and I know you're going to be a great addition to my journey here.
Yes, my husband calls me a missing link all the time because I'm
I love it. Well, now you're also my missing link. There you go. He's on to something. Yeah. Well, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and kind of tell us about your background and journey and how you came to where you are now.
Sure. So as a little girl, I grew up always knowing that I wanted to be a doctor. And then when I when I was in college, my dad, who is a doctor, scared me out of being a doctor. So I was an engineer briefly. And then I was actually a biochemist. I went to Cornell for the PhD program there in molecular biology. And it just wasn't my cup of tea at all because it was about genetic engineering actually. And first you learn about the genes and how complicated they are. And then you are doing the basic research on trying to understand them in more depth. And it was clear that we were never going to be able to control this stuff in a way that would be helpful, useful, safe, or whatever. So I bailed. I was like, I'm just going to go to medical school. I don't care if my dad says I'm going to end up, waiting in line at food stamps because there's too many doctors. So I went to medical school, and I was actually really hoping that I could get to the root of understanding of some of my recurring connective tissue problems that I had. I had shin splints and tendonitis and all this kind of stuff. And I didn't get to the root of that. But I did learn a lot about the body and physiology. And it was fun. It was, medical school was so great because you just learn so much and it's so practical and you're interacting with other human beings in such a privileged way. It's just really great. And then I was out in the world practicing and kind of became sad because I had learned so much and a lot of it just wasn't applicable to my daily experience of churning people through and, 7 minute to 15 minute visits, refilling blood pressure medications, and not really seeing that it was making a difference and feeling like I was a salesperson, it's super important to take these pills, and it just felt wrong. And then I actually got super sick. I had a nasty viral infection in my knee. And this is the kind of family of viruses that can kill people. So, it basically almost paralyzed me. I couldn't walk for 2 years and it was awful. My boss was not a very nice person. And he was like, I don't see any evidence of any infection. And he was just horrible. So he barely let me cut back my hours or, I had to sit and call patients into my room. That was a problem for him. Anyway, so it was a nightmare. And to try to get better, I did everything. I had surgery. I got all kinds of MRI scans. Nothing made it any better. I even went to a kahuna, and I tried that. And that didn't help either. I was very disappointed because at one point in time I was convinced it was a curse, but and maybe it still is. My husband actually got me a book about by Andrew Weil called Splontaneous Healing that talked about fatty acids that your body needs. That what blew my mind, because this was, you know, 2001, and not, you know, the entire world knew about fish oil and omega-3 and those benefits at that point in time. And so I just wanted to understand more about fatty acids and why they were beneficial. And what I ended up doing to do that was I had to fly to Oahu, because that was the nearest medical bookstore. Amazon didn't deliver at that point in time. Can you believe that? And you're probably 10, so... so I had to like take a wheelchair to the airport, and I got myself a biochemistry book and read it cover to cover, and realized that, there was a lot more about the science of, nutrition that I needed to know, because there was just a lot more. And understanding it at the biochemical level and the cellular level, and then the tissue level and the physiology level, and then the cooking level, what became my mission in life for the next 5-6 years. And finally, my husband and I started working together on the book that became Deep Nutrition, Why Your Genes Need Traditional Food. And so that was kind of like the beginning. And then it kind of had like a, you know, a big underground following, just because I think it was, there's a need for that kind of information. And the reading of it was, because my husband is an amazing writer, he made it like, kind of, I mean, I'm not a writer, but there's people who can write historical stories in a way that makes kind of a perhaps boringish story amazing. So that's what he does.
See, I would need help in that area. That's not something I can do. All right, that's what I need to read, is something that he can write.
Exactly. So as that, you know, became popular, then my medical practice became popular, which became extremely stressful, because I still had to do the same churning people through in 15 minutes. And then suddenly people wanted to talk to me for 2 hours. And it was like, oh my God, I can't deal. So I went through a series of looking for jobs. So I was in Hawaii for like 11 years. Then I moved to, in quick succession, New Hampshire, California, Colorado, Connecticut, and now I'm in Florida. And it wasn't until I moved to Florida that I actually like became where I needed to be. Now I'm where I needed to be, because I'm actually working for a company, not a hospital. And so like I'm the company doctor around reversing chronic disease, right? So that they can ultimately save money in healthcare. And that is great, because their interests are saving money in healthcare, and the only way to do that is to actually get people healthy. Plus, they're a good company. They kind of care about their employees, and they want them to be healthier. And my interests are exactly the same. So there's an alignment for the first time in my 20-plus year career, because typically, you know, working for a hospital system, they couldn't care less if your patients are healthy. They just want you to earn money so that you can, the primary care doctor is basically the mousetrap to get people in the healthcare system, you know, so that since we're too busy, we can't talk to our patients, we have to make referrals and do unnecessary tests and end up, you know, hopefully getting people on chronic drugs. That's the goal.
Well, and that's the part that I like about what you're saying, is it doesn't feel good whenever I feel like a pill's prescribed. I've never once felt good about taking them. And that's what led me to my journey of trying to figure out. I'm like, I don't think we are made to feel this type of pain. I really don't.
Right. Exactly. No. And, you know, the doctor's not equipped, because they don't get like the connection. We don't get that background that we need on the connection between the pro-inflammatory materials in our new weird food system and the dysfunction in the growth and function of every tissue in the body.
And that's the background that I'm just now diving into, which is, I'm so glad I found you, because on the surface I started with, I just need lots of fruits and veggies and some beans and maybe more some, you know, plant-based items to help. And that actually did help, like take out dairy, because I know that was, you know, pretty high with inflammation. And I actually did start to feel better, but I still was way more tired than I felt I should be. And I'm like, there is more information out there on this, because I'm 37. I'm not like 95. And I really feel like if you take care of your body, you can feel amazing, you know, into your 70s, 80s, even 90s, as long as you're truly taking care of your body. I think what we think of the elderly should not be the way it is if we start taking care of our body. And sometimes I'm like, oh, is it too late? I'm 37. And I'm like, no, it's not too late. And I know you've talked about, you know, the amount of time it takes to turn your body around, but it's well worth it. It's well worth it.
Absolutely. I mean, and a lot of it does depend on your genetics. Like in some senses, there is like a glass ceiling, like for people like me, because I don't have really good connective tissue. So I'm not going to probably make it as far as my grandmother, who's right now 102. And yeah,
so most people probably won't though. So.
Yeah. So I guess it's only fair, right? But yeah, I mean, like she's an example of like what we could have done with our, you know, she was 97 and doing Zumba, right? So now she's like, she's stone deaf and like, she's finally starting to act like an old person just in the last few months, where she walks really, really tiny steps and stuff. But until then, she was like, at her 100th birthday, she was dancing. And other than being stone deaf, she was like basically totally normal person, you know, as normal as she ever was. And, you know, with it, reading the newspaper, taking notes in the newspaper and stuff like that. So, and having a garden. So that's the way like life is supposed to be, right? But we mess things up in the name of Madison Avenue. And that's kind of like the big like sad story of the 20th century is that we thought we were making all this progress post-World War II with this better living through chemistry ideals. And they thought there was an agricultural revolution because we were using petrochemical fertilizers and being able to grow so much more wheat and corn and stuff like that, that monoculture, you know, horror and everything that's arisen from that. And it's just because of ignorance and greed. And we are reeling physically from that ignorance and greed. We are, our bodies and our illnesses are testimony to the fact that human culture has almost like failed itself. Mm-hmm. And we're struggling right now, like podcasts like this, to be able to get the right information out so that we can piece it back together, hopefully before, you know, children really don't have much of a health really. And in the book, Deep Nutrition, my husband and I talk about this, that was originally published in 2009 and re-released in 2017. We talk about the coming tsunami of children with autoimmune disease and allergies and chronic disease. And guess what? It's happening and it's going to get worse. And we really need to, if we don't want to fall into that trap, we have to educate ourselves, because there's just the system, just like the hospital system, it wants you in and on chronic medications. The government is all aligned to that same goal, because the healthcare industry and the food industries are the biggest industries, and the way they are, the fat cats on top are totally happy. They don't want it to change. They want it to get deeper and worse. And, you know, as individuals, we have to fight and struggle for ourselves every day. And so every meal that you buy and every good food, you know, that you seek out, as opposed to processed food or whatever, is a, you know, a little battle that you've won in this giant war that is a war on your health.
Oh, I totally agree. And what really breaks my heart is what you brought up earlier, the children, how the children are suffering. I've seen, I mean, just being a school teacher myself, I've even seen a change in the last 15 years, although it was even a problem 15 years ago, mm-hmm. but just the amount of like autoimmune diseases, that are out there, and like so allergies. Oh my goodness, the poor children on their allergies, and yeah,
food allergies.
It's food allergies. Yeah, food allergies.
Food, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So
it's a vicious cycle, because suddenly you can't, or you have textural issues with so many foods because your sensory processing doesn't work, or you know, you have all these food intolerances and you don't know really what to do. So you end up just feeding your kids, you know, like Temple Grandin was only able to eat Jell-O and yogurt, right? And that's basically the kind of thing a lot of children have their diets narrowed down. There's nowhere near enough nutrition in that.
Mm-hmm. No, it's so challenging. And that was the other part of my health journey too, is once I became a mom, you really do start paying attention to a little more of the food that goes in your children's body, because you want better for them, for maybe than what, you know, you did. And it's, you know, most parents' dream, I would assume, is to want more for their children than they had. And it's just interesting to watch, because you can control what's going on in your household, but then they go off to school or to friends or birthday parties, and it's everywhere. I was telling you earlier how we're in the midst of a remodel, and so we haven't had a kitchen,
And I mean, just the sink alone and stovetop or anything is really challenging. And then when you go out trying to get something, you know, pre-made for you, you really cannot find anything that's truly healthy, like true whole foods that maybe aren't doused with oil or anything else they put in it. And it's been really challenging. And I've noticed my health's gone downhill a little bit in the past month. My knees are back to being more stiff again. I'm having more pain in my hips and my back. And I know what's happening. So yes, my countertop and kitchen going in tomorrow. And I'm excited. And I've been doing a lot of research the last couple months also. But it's hard. And I think if it was more accessible, maybe more people would do it because convenience is a thing these days, unfortunately.
And I think that is the problem, right? So we are almost kind of set up to want to have these shortcuts that are actually killing us. Mm-hmm. And what I like to do whenever I talk to my patients and talk about the book Deep Nutrition is explain that the two most important pro-inflammatory kinds of foods out there are actually categories of food. So it's actually vegetable oils and then foods that raise your blood sugar quickly. And so vegetable oils and foods that raise your blood sugar together compose somewhere between 60 and 80% of the average person's calories these days. So vegetable oils are like soy, corn, cottonseed, canola, sunflower, safflower. I call them the three C's and the three S's of the apocalypse, the health apocalypse. Those oils are pro-inflammatory in a way that very few people, even in the health space, even in the underground health movement, even the people understand the benefits of the keto diet and the paleo diet, don't quite understand all the implications of it, because the chemistry, the biochemistry, the cell physiology, and so on are so profound. It's like we can't possibly be healthy consuming these things in the amount that we do. And I already said, together that's 60 to 80%. Well, just looking at fat calories, it's 80%. These vegetable oils, highly processed vegetable oils that never existed before the industrial era, are now 80% of the average person's diet. And I wish more people were talking about this. So since they're not, I am going to have to just go into it. I'm sorry.
No, and I think you should, because I remember thinking certain oils were healthy.
Yeah, right.
Well, imagine how it's changed for me, for my thinking. But then now that I think that, I think everyone knows about that. They don't.
No. And we still hear that like canola oil is healthy, particularly from dietitians, because they are, I have to say it, brainwashed into believing it because their education is directly paid for by Unilever and, Monsanto. And it's the dietetic community is run by corporations more so than any other health, like accreditation system, right? Like, you can be a naturopath and you're not owned lock, stock, and barrel by any particular corporation. But if you're a dietitian, you are, and you don't realize it. And there was a really important article in Mother Jones not too long ago about that issue, and it was republished. So you can look at, look it up, something like I went to the American Dietetic Association conference, and it was sponsored by Coca-Cola or something like that. It's like in the Mother Jones article. And it was literally the people who are giving the lectures that these dietitians have to take courses for maintaining their license. They are employees of Coca-Cola downplaying, the harms of sugar, right? But the vegetable oil is what I want to talk about, because everybody, I think, really kind of knows and sugar is not good for you, and candy and sweets and stuff, no one understands that as like health food. But what people don't realize is that the degree to which the actual fat calories from actual food have been taken out of the food supply and replaced with these vegetable oils. So now that you, it's hard to get whole fat dairy. It's hard to, right? You want to buy yogurt and most of it's low fat and loaded with extra sugar. And it's hard to find chicken anymore that's not boneless, skinless, right? There's like most of it is boneless, skinless now. And the fact that people need to cook super fast, they want that boneless, skinless because it seems to them that it's going to be faster or it's more foolproof or something. And you know, ground beef, well, people want to buy that 90% or 95% lean ground beef and they want their pork totally trimmed and all this kind of stuff. So when you, in the end, at the end of all that alteration, there's very little actual natural fat in the diet, particularly coming from animal fats, and most of the fats coming from these seed oils, these vegetable oils that are refined, bleached, deodorized, and unstable at the molecular level. And that is the source of most inflammation. Okay, so like a lot of folks talk about a lot of foods being pro-inflammatory. And I have to say that it's confusing to people because what they'll do is exactly what you did. Probably you cut out, you know, dairy and you probably cut out foods that contain gluten, like, you know, refined wheats and stuff like that. And you felt better. But I guarantee, because when I get down to it with everybody, you also are eating a lot less of the vegetable oils and probably a lot more of the natural fats.
That's absolutely true. For me personally, that's absolutely what I'm doing because I try to pride myself on eating like loads of vegetables and even checking into the right types of vegetables or at least the amounts and some fruits. And you're right, no oils as much as I could.
And that is the most important change because the of all the foods, like just looking at it from the 30,000 foot view, right? People used to eat legumes. We've been consuming dairy for a long time. We've even been consuming wheat, right? But we didn't make it into flour until 1,000 years ago. And we did a lot of other things to it that made it much more nutritious than flour. But there was no such thing as vegetable oil until the industrial era. And the biochemistry of those oils is profoundly different than the biochemistry, the chemical makeup of the fats that our bodies need. And that it needs to be understood before you can understand anything about inflammation. We need to kind of like tap that a little bit, tap into what are the implications of that? And that's what I did. And I should do that to some degree in the books, Deep Nutrition, so people can kind of start to understand a little bit of it. But there's even more than what goes into that, than what's in the books. I mean, that's just scratching the surface. Because it's as though we are building our bodies, our body fat, right? Our body fat is made out of what we eat to some degree. And if you look at the body fat composition of Americans today, you find, the latest studies were not even today, so it'd be worse today. But in 2005, 2010, there was 20% in the adipose tissue, 20% composition of this one fatty acid that's a polyunsaturated, unstable fatty acid called linoleic acid. And if you go back and look at the studies on the fatty acid composition of humans, the oldest one I could find was like from 1900. It was like 1-2%. So we've changed the biochemistry from 1-2% of this polyunsaturated fatty acid to 20%. And that has such profound implications on our metabolism and our ability to generate energy that I had to write a whole nother book, which is what I just got finished doing. And it's going to be out next year.
Oh, awesome. Because it's almost scary, the lack of information. And I've actually come a long way from what I used to think was healthy, which is funny. So I'm definitely on the right track. But even just hearing you talk about the inflammation in a way that I had not even thought of. And I've even done lots of my research and have talked to a lot of amazing people that are also in this, you know, same field of trying to heal the body, like I just talked to Dr. Terry Walls not long ago, who pretty much took care of her symptoms of MS by studying the diet and just environmental factors and so on. And I'm like, you know, and like what you have done with your knees, and you took control of your life. I'm like, if you can take control of your life with the amount of pain you're in and the answers you couldn't solve through the diet and what you're putting in your body, like surely I can heal my knees just from being a little sore walking up the stairs.
Absolutely. I mean, I hear this is like now that the book's been out for a long time and that there's more people who understand, more doctors and more just like people who understand that it's okay to eat, you know, the foods that we used to eat, including butter, including coconut oil, including avocado oil and peanut oil. And I feel like there's been a small little revolution in those people who have had these health problems. We now have access to information that we never have had. And there's just success story after success story. Like now that I'm working where I'm working, I've seen patients whose doctors told them that, you know, you have to be on insulin for the rest of your life. Their fasting blood sugars were in the 200s in 3 months of working with me. And these are people who don't make a lot of money, you know, so people call this sometimes an elitist diet, but these are folks who are definitely not in that elitist category. And we got them off of their insulin and their fasting blood sugars went from being in the 200s to being normal. It's work. There's work in the kitchen that people have to do, but I help them with that. That's my job. And it's very, like empowering because people go from, you know, I don't know how to cook, right? I don't like being in the kitchen, to telling me like they're watching documentaries and they're finding all these great websites. Now that the keto diet's so popular, they're finding all these keto websites and just like, they just tell me about like all these things that they try cooking and they buy air fryers. And it's like, oh my God, you are so amazing. I never expected that, you know, from where we started with you didn't really enjoy being in the kitchen. Now you're having fun. It's like amazing. And I love those kinds of stories. And so that's like that's like my space. I'm trying to move into that more now where I help more just like replicate that experience for as many people as possible, for my employer first, and then hopefully for the world, since his goal is to save planet Earth.
Oh, but you have to have big goals like that and come up with a plan of like, what are we going to do to get there?
Right.
You have to have that big picture goal. You really do. And then, okay, take a step back. What do we need to do to save planet Earth? But it really is saving one person at a time. Because that person tells their experiences to their family or their friends. And you do start listening. Because I've had people reach out to me like, oh, I see that you're really on this health journey. What have you found out? Or why do you do that? Like, I'm pretty healthy. And it's, well, a lot of people look healthy from the outside. Mm-hmm. And they don't have symptoms yet. But I say yet because I think eventually it does happen. I just have the symptoms of the inflammation. And I think some people even have the symptoms of inflammation that aren't aware of it. They're not aware of how they can feel.
Exactly. Or, well, they're at risk too. Like there's another thing. It's like kind of like a stepwise degradation of health. Like you're fine, or you think you're pretty close to fine, right? And then all of a sudden you get a stress or something happens and then things really crumble, right? Like, you know, when things fall apart, it's kind of not super gradually all the time. It's like there are spikes of degradation, right? And something really gets bad. And then after that happens, now it's even harder to make changes. So, I run into the other side of it where people have children and they've had, what they've done is a lot of work, right? Where they've gotten the vegetable oils out of their diet and then they've reduced the amount of processed sugars and stuff like that. But still their children have, you know, some problems, like they still get colds and stuff like that. But they can feel like, oh my God, I'm doing all this work and they're not perfect. And that's a natural thing. But if you look around and get perspective of what happens if you don't do that, just like what you just said, like you look at other people's children and you think they're healthy, but nuh-uh, they come into the doctor's office and they just have so many problems. Like, you know, maybe they need glasses all of a sudden. They're only age 3. Maybe they are age 7, but they're still bedwetting. Maybe they are age 10, but they suddenly develop like debilitating anxiety and they can't make it through their school. Like maybe something even like after a small infection, suddenly they seem to be totally different people. These are things that can happen when the physiology of a human body is set to pop. It's set to go off at any minute because that's kind of what you've got when you've got a body made out of these unstable polyunsaturated fatty acids that are the problem, that are the reason that the vegetable oils are unhealthy. They're made out of fatty acids that are molecularly unstable. When your body is made out of, has such a high concentration of molecules that are unstable, that promotes inflammation. And that is the most powerful, most important source of inflammation in the body that nobody almost is talking about. That is far more important than, you know, than the whole thing about dairy being inflammatory. You know, I understand that people who have improved by cutting out dairy, maybe their issue was that when they were little, they got exposed to casein protein, right, as a processed product, and their body did make an antibody to that. But it's not that dairy is inherently pro-inflammatory. It's that we process it to death and consume it in the setting of these pro-inflammatory fatty acids that just make our bodies, you know, all the time, we can't tell the difference between self and not self. That's the job of the immune system. And if you have an autoimmune disease, it's because your immune system is confused. It's not that you're eating necessarily, you know, dairy or legumes or even gluten. It's that your immune system has seen those same proteins in the context of vegetable oil and sugar-induced inflammation and has mistaken those proteins for proteins that actually are, that a sign that you have a bacterial infection. So it activates the immune system on a constant basis of low-level immune system activation. So you have just constant sensitivity in the gut. And if you don't have like a perfect day, then your digestive system can start having spasms. And that's where a lot of children are now because, you know, they had formula feed or that they were fed on formula, right, instead of breast milk, or their parents were having vegetable oil. And so in the breast milk, they've conveyed these wrong fatty acids to the child. And it's just on and on and on where we've been feeding ourselves. The foundation of our fat intake has been unstable fatty acids. And we are seeing the consequences of that when you go to a normal kindergarten or all these children have these different issues. They can't concentrate the way they're supposed to. They have lots and lots and lots of anxiety. And food intolerances, in a way, are an anxious gut, right? Because your gut is always on that hair trigger of like, oh my God, I feel like I'm developing an infection if I don't get just the right amount of food and the right texture and the right, you know, context and the right amount of water and the right amount of fluid, I'm just going to start spasming and then send this kid into whatever kind of a, you know, bad mood or who knows what they're dealing with. Like, you know, when they're little, like, they don't have the words to describe, but there's a lot of discomfort that comes from that chronic low level of inflammation. And the parents are just left trying to understand what on earth can this child eat? The family gets divided. You can't even eat the same foods anymore. And it stems from, more than any one thing, these pro-inflammatory unstable fatty acids in the body. And if you just could eliminate those and then also get your sugar intake under control, you would take control of your health and, like, you know, 90 to 95% of what you need to get done would be done in that one step. You don't have to go through all the conniptions of, you know, food allergy testing and all this other stuff because it's not helpful. It's not accurate and it's not sensitive enough. When a child's immune system is messed up, that is the problem. It's the immune system that is messed up. And it's not that they can't eat these foods. It's that the immune system is misperceiving proteins in these foods as antigens from bacteria or signs that there's a, you know, viral infection or something that needs to be attacked. So there's always this low level, low grade inflammation, and you can feed them anything in the wrong amount or at the wrong time, and it's going to upset their system. If that makes sense. I know I've been going on sort of a rant here.
No, I've been taking it all in because all these things just keep popping in my mind. My children do not have any known food allergies that I am aware of to this point, thankfully. And I'm still working on what goes in their body. But you almost kind of got me excited about the few things that you can start working on to cut out that doesn't seem maybe as overwhelming as a parent.
Right, exactly. And it's literally like the reason that the keto diet, I think, is so popular is because it's the one popular diet since I've been alive that actually specifically directs people to the healthier fats and therefore away from the vegetable oils. I know it's the keto diet, they talk about it as like the reason it works is because it is a low carb diet. Okay, the real reason it works is because it gets you away from these polyunsaturated fatty acids. It tells you, like the people who follow the keto diet, they tell you to go ahead and have plenty of butter and coconut oil and avocado oil. Oh, and P.S., make your own salad dressing because it's not the keto diet, folks. Are more aware of the harms of these vegetable oils than any other, you know, movement. Most of the people who have the super popular keto blogs and video blogs and cooking classes, they direct you away from canola oil and soy oil and even products made with those things. Like they'll tell you, you don't want to get regular mayonnaise. You want to get mayonnaise made with avocado oil or some other kind of stable oil, like olive oil or something. So that diet is super popular because it works. And finally, we've gotten something where your eye is on the prize here, and it does get you down off your carbs. And a lot of these folks that have the most popular keto blogs are not truly keto. I mean, their carb amounts are high enough, or their protein amounts are high enough where you wouldn't be in ketosis. And it works because it's getting them away from the worst of the sugars and, you know, getting their carb intakes under control. All the things that raise their blood sugar are now under control. You're getting what I call like the slower digesting carbs, the slow carbs. And those are, your carbs are going to be coming from intact food, like beans, for example, or sprouted grain bread that I recommend all the time. And so that you can actually have some of these more convenient foods. You can still give your kid a sandwich. It's just going to be out of Ezekiel bread instead of Wonder Bread.
Yep, Ezekiel bread's my go-to.
Awesome.
Well, it's fascinating to see because I think a lot of maybe parents out there are listening because I think it's easier for adults to at least make the change in their diets if they know they need to. The harder part sometimes is with their children who are used to eating, I don't know, modern day food here in America. Mm-hmm. So if you had one bit of advice for them, what you've talked about this a lot, would it be more obviously the sugars we know the, you know, the white sugars and everything that are just out there, cupcakes, donuts, anything, even just pre-made oatmeal, all of the sugars that are there. And then the oils, would that be your advice to start?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And that means that you can, since I don't tell people to cut out dairy is like the source of so many wonderful, convenient foods, like whole milk, plain yogurt or Greek yogurt, or cottage cheese. That's delicious. And kids like that with just a little bit of fruit, or I like it with a little bit of nuts on it. And just a tiny bit of jelly mixed in or something like that for some flavor, sweetness. And cheese, right? And, you know, cheese is like the original convenience food. Like I love some of these, you know, whenever I watch a TV show, I'm just amazed at the accuracy of the research culinary wise that people do. Cause there was like just a scene, one of many millions of scenes in Boardwalk Empire, which takes place in the 1920s, I think, or 19 teens, or somewhere in the time of Prohibition, whatever that was. and it shows this one guy just like who has to pack his own lunch, right? And so what does he pack? Because he's out, I don't know, like stalking somebody he's going to kill or something. He packs cheese and an apple. And that was fast, convenient lunch food. And it's totally true. It's accurate. It's what people could do. Cheese, you don't really have to keep in a refrigerator for a couple hours. You just wrap it in whatever. And an apple, right? So that's the kind of simplicity that you can give your kids. It's like a super healthy, if your cheese, if they like the cheese, it's super healthy. And you could give them an apple, or even maybe better would be some vegetables if they like them, right? They have to like them.
They do. And that's what I'm still working on with my children. One of them, well, actually two of the three, the younger ones, will eat broccoli as long as there's some hummus around. But then it's the problem of making the hummus to make sure there's not the oils in it and things like that, at least for me at this point. But it's interesting because my oldest son does take his lunch to school every day. The lunches at school aren't the healthiest, but on top of it, he doesn't like them anyway. And he's not the healthiest kid in the world. He doesn't like it. So I'm happy not to pay for that lunch at school and to send his lunch. But it's interesting. It's nice to hear just the simple things that we actually do put in, because he loves cheese. But do you have any advice on the cheese? Because I know like some are so processed. So do you have any advice for parents on cheese or even for themselves?
Well, yeah. So like the best is really going to be cheese that comes from pasture fed cows, right? So the grass was from cows grazing pasture, or you know, sometimes they have to eat hay, but not getting grains. And so that's the best. Then the second best would be organic, if you can get it. Then the third would at least be that free of that RBST stuff, that extra hormone that dilutes the quality, makes them produce like high volume, watery milk. And then you want to avoid cheese food, right? Like American cheese or things that say processed cheese, or when the ingredients really is anything other than milk, right? So that if you look at it and it says casein and a bunch of weird things that you never heard of, if it says something really other than milk or cream and cultures, there really should be just like three or four ingredients in cheese, unless it's flavored cheese, then it can be the spice. But that's going to be good. And it's all the good cheeses are really all your traditional cheeses. So, and it's really almost everything except for Velveeta and American cheese. Your Gouda, your provolone, your mozzarella, your cheddar, your Munster, those are the best because they are fermented a little bit longer, and that reduces the amount of carb even further. Mozzarella isn't really fermented. It's sort of enzymatically made, but and that's actually what the cheese sticks come from, is mozzarella. So it's not quite as good as if you gave them the cheddar or provolone, but it's still super healthy. So I would say it's not a bad thing. You could upgrade it if you wanted to.
Well, that's great advice, I think, for parents, for themselves and their children, because that's something all three of my children eat, especially the Greek yogurt and things like that. So it makes me feel a little better that I'm at least on the right track with them.
Yeah.
So we've been talking about Deep Nutrition, your book. Real quick, what can a reader expect to get out of this book that maybe they can take away right away, like for their health? Or
yeah, I think the main thing we want to do, we want to convey, is that chefs are the original nutritionists. And when you're looking for, when you're out there sort of in that inky blackness of uncertainty and like all the different diet ideas, you know, should we eat only plants? Should we eat only meat? Do we have to be keto? Do we have to avoid wheat and dairy? What about paleo? And all these different ideas. And oh gosh, then there's the guy that says we have to like peel our grapes or something like that because of lectins. That's a cool one. And never would have come up with that myself. That we actually have the answers, and we actually have a massive body of powerful science that takes the shape of all these old cookbooks, because within the pages of, you know, cookbooks from before World War II is just tons and tons of scientifically proven successful information on how to grow healthy children and healthy families. That's 1,000 times better than what we're doing now. Because like my grandmother, who's 102, she grew up on those kinds of foods that was in like the Fanny Farmer, like 1985 cookbook, and even the Joy of Cooking from pre-World War II, which I have a copy of, that they actually talk about how to prepare the organ meats and the, you know, the tidbits of the animal that we don't even consider as eating. These are actually essential foods. And you know, when people grew up getting them, they have much greater opportunity for health than when they grow up not getting them, unfortunately. But still, as long as you're alive, when you start going in that direction of just traditional food, traditional cuisine, you are in the right direction and you're going to be optimizing your genetic performance. The subtitle of our book, the book is called Deep Nutrition, and the subtitle is Why Your Genes Need Traditional Food, because you can change your genetic expression during your life by getting the kinds of foods that your genes expect. How do we know what our genes expect? Well, we look at what people did. And how do we know what people did? We have thousands, millions of recipes from pre-World War II. And what did people do? They ate butter. They ate vegetables that they grew themselves, slathered in butter. They had cream sauces. They had, you know, every part of the animal they cooked. They used it in an intelligent, saving way that chefs still do. They think about, okay, so this week I have these things I'm starting out with. You know, I'm going to cook maybe a chicken and a bunch of vegetables. And then by the end of the week, I have some leftover vegetables and I've got the bones. So now I'm going to make the bones into a chicken soup. And that is what chefs do. That is how people used to think about planning their meals. It was, how do I make, you know, how do I make use of the whole animal? Because that's what you had to buy, the whole animal with the bones in it. And how do I, you know, not let anything that I've purchased go to waste? And that's what people used to do. So in all those kinds of cookbooks is, you know, instructions for that. And once you understand that mindset, which we teach you in Deep Nutrition, is what is that mindset and what can it do? We try to inspire people too, and how it can actually change the way your children grow, how tall they can become, how strong their bones are, whether, you know, whether or not they need braces, it can influence all that. And so we kind of try to give the big picture. And I would say that you should read the book a couple of times, because one of the faults that we did was we didn't really repeat ourselves, because we wanted to cram a ton of information into a small space, and it's still a big book. So most people have to read it a couple times to really, really understand it. And then when they really understand it, the other misinformation is able to sort of bank off them, and then they kind of have their heart and their like trajectory plotted out for them where they feel like comfortable that they need to go.
Well, and it keeps you motivated because it keeps it fresh in your mind too. And when you reread books that have the information that you need. So like I said, I have the book, and then you brought up the point of, yeah, it's on Audible. You can also listen to it in the car. Cause I think that a lot of people are very busy. So there's also that option when you're on like your hour long commute every day.
Yeah, totally. It's a great option. And actually people have said that they like read it to their children and stuff like that. So like some people have said, like, it's our nutrition Bible. Like we used to, during Bible studies, I used to read passages and reread them. So they do that the same with our book, which I was like, wow, that's awesome. I love hearing that.
Well, then maybe kids will understand why some food is so great for them. Not so much about what you can't have. This is what you can have, and look what it's going to do for your body.
Yeah. And then, you know, the kids process it and you hear them. Like I get some stories of like their kids reflecting on like what they've learned and having their own perspective on, you know, what they should eat and being in alignment, right? With like, you know, totally like, oh, the parents coming up with, well, hey, that's a good idea. You know, like, so it's, when I hear those kinds of stories, it's like the best compliment I could ever get is that like my kids love your book. So
that's a huge compliment, because yeah. food can be, not always, it can be a struggle for younger children just because of how they're brought up.
Right.
No
right.
fault to their own.
Yeah, you have to totally. No, I mean, the parents don't learn. And so they can actually develop patterns that are counterproductive without even realizing it. And then now you've got these patterns. So it makes it extra hard. So, I mean, I totally understand that it's a tough journey. You got your work cut out for you. But my sister is like a perfect example of like she learned in time, like before she had kids. I don't have kids, but my sister has two. And they never had anything bad. And like my niece, who's six now, like her favorite foods are like one of her birthdays, she wanted brie, dulce seaweed, and red wine. Her dad is French, by the way.
I mean, that sounds like most 6-year-old birthdays that I've been to. Oh, that makes me so happy, though. And I know there's hope for my children. My youngest is actually the best. And it's interesting when you were talking about the breast milk. I breastfed all three of my children. Still am. My almost 2-year-old, actually. But I probably had the best health during her pregnancy and when she was younger. And I'm like, I always did wonder, I'm like, I wonder if that made a bigger difference in her and what she's willing to eat and kind of like her taste palette of the things that she'll try. Now she's a little picky. She's coming on 2, but it's still, we just, you know, keep giving it to her. But
and definitely what I see a lot is that the pattern, like when parents come into this, like before their first, then their second child is like even easier in any kind of ways, you know, like whether it's like learning or socially or whatever, that the second child seems to be even healthier. So it's like there's a momentum that's turned around, right? So that things get better and better. So that's cool.
Yeah, that's why I'm excited to really dive in into your book. And with Vital, we really care about, you know, where our food comes from. And we think it's just important to have transparency. There shouldn't be anything hidden. And if you still choose to eat it, then you choose to eat it. But at least you know and you have that information. And you talk about like meat cooked on the bone and organ meats. And you were talking about that a little bit earlier because a long time ago, you know, you had to buy the whole animal. And like you said, with the planning of the meals as the week went on. Do you have any suggestions for people when they're buying meat?
Definitely if you can get grass-fed, I should say cows, right? So, because cows eat grass, pigs are omnivores, eat a variety of stuff. And chickens, of course, don't eat grass, but or not a lot. So grass-fed, like beef, cattle, and what you really want to look for is 100% grass-fed because I'm not a cattle person, but I've talked to a lot of ranchers and what they say is, you know, it's kind of a misnomer because all cattle really do start out on grass, but it's the finishing. So the finishing could be 180 days of grain, 90 days, 60 days, whatever, 30 days. But if you can get the 100 and I mean the whole deal with grass, then that's better. And the more grass, the better. And the more different variety of parts of meat you want to get. If you can, you know, you can even get like the stew meats. This isn't really stew meat time of year, but because it's coming up on summer, it's too hot to do the slow cooking. But that kind of tougher meat has more of the collagen in there. You get some very special benefits from collagen and connective tissue and joint material that, you know, if you buy like whole chickens, you can get the bones with the connective tissue and make soup out of that. It has a whole different benefit to your connective tissue and particularly skin, hair, and nails. It makes them glow.
Who doesn't love that?
Right.
The extra added benefit. So why... So you talked about obviously how it can affect your appearances and things like that. Why should people care about where maybe their meat come from or even just other types of food as well? Or why do you care about where your food comes from?
I'll tell you why I care, because I care about the whole process. I want children to be excited about going into farming and agriculture. And it's not going to happen if they're working for, you know, a factory farm, if they're working for Tyson, if they're doing, you know, something horrible to animals. But if they are working with the land, working with the ecosystem, figuring out what their particular plot of land needs, it's a science. And I want, you know, children to the next generation to be much more excited and inspired about that science and respected for it, honestly, because there was a generation, I think, of the 50s, they really poo-pooed the whole idea of, you know, you had your child had to go to college. They couldn't be a farmer. Like, that's like menial labor. And that was our picture of it. But no, it's truly, it's a science. You have to be an expert in animal life cycles and midwifery of a whole bunch of different species and their diets. And if you're doing it naturally, not all grain, you have to be a master of your ecosystem and how to extract. It's just the ecology of it all. And it's, you know, to me, it's fascinating. And I think that it is, you know, not something that we want to shy children away from, because there's so many opportunities there. And that part of that picture of inspiring children to make the world a better place, the way that they could, I think that's important for the next generation, especially the next this generation, because it's like, we've done such a horrible job previously. We've kind of wrecked a lot of things for them. So if we can inspire them to rebuild, that will give them hope, because I can see a lot of children just being depressed because they don't even see that there's hope, and you know, sadly enough, you know, and they grow up in these food deserts and all, they think chicken is a nugget. They don't even know it comes from an animal. They don't know what celery and broccoli are the same things in their minds. And, you know, that's bad. And so knowing where your food comes from and caring is an aspect of understanding the very important big picture. It's an outgrowth, right? It's like, it's a byproduct. I don't think really anybody starts out, well, maybe people do because they don't want to eat, you know, pesticides, and they understand that GMOs are kind of bad for the environment and stuff like that. But I think that it's really truly in their bones. They know that it's part of a bigger conversation. It's part of the right thing to do. That is a much bigger picture than just pesticide-free, GMO-free. It's part of the future.
Oh, I agree. And we do need children to grow up caring and wanting to. And if you put that in front of them, they do. They do. I was just in my kindergarten class a couple weeks ago. We were talking about, you know, recycling, but then we also got into composting kind of organically with that thought. And they went home and they were talking to their parents about composting and starting a garden and how it's going to be healthier and it's better for the earth. And, yeah. And you know, these are 6-year-olds, and it was like the best thing they've ever heard.
Right. Because how often do they these days get to hear something that puts them in alignment with the bigger picture that they live in, you know? I mean, so much of like the ABCs is cool because now they can text their friends on their cell phones faster, but it's not really that transcendence that I think is the part of the human experience that's missing so much from our culture these days, where we understand that there's a bigger picture, that there's more than just us, that it's this continuing story that we can be part of in a positive way. And that's so, so important.
It is really important. And you've touched on this too, but with medicines and food, but what's your view of the future of medicine? It's a pretty big picture question, but.
I think right now there's an interesting sort of secret battle going on between the hospitals and the insurance systems and the pharmaceutical companies and the employers, who actually pay for half of medical care in this country. And the employers are trying to take control, and they don't own the legislature to the degree that the bad guys do. But if they do take control, then they can fix the system, because their interests are in alignment. They want their employees to be healthy and you know, not be sick and not be on expensive medications and not need to be hospitalized for having premature babies or cancer. And the other side, they want that to happen. They love premature babies and cancer. They can't get enough of it because it's just cha-ching, cha-ching. So, you know, that has to be defeated. And right now the people who have the most chance of actually defeating is the intelligent consumer, who is an employee at a workplace and wants to help support the employee in driving change towards a healthier workplace. Because believe it or not, employees, they do, like, even, you know, what we think of as big, bad corporations, and even ironically, you know, like McDonald's, I'm sure they have wellness programs in place where they would like to have their employees be healthier, and they maybe don't understand that they're kind of part of the problem, but or exactly how they're part of the problem. But the companies like my company, which is a wine company, is a retail, just retail, right? Retail and shipping and IT and, you know, Google and Facebook, these folks that don't have a vested interest in evil in any way, you know, in destroying the food chain and creating unhealthy people. Those employers are in the best position to take on the bad guys. And it's still a, you know, David and Goliath scenario, because there's a lot of laws in place that make it hard for the employers to even do the right thing. And I'm where I am now. I've spent the last year learning a lot about that. But I see that there's a lot of employers out there that are trying to do the right thing. And if they win, then, you know, that will be the end of the evil big pharma.
Well, I'm glad you're bringing attention to that, because I think it's a hard thing to talk about, but I think it's important that people know that, because it does. I just feel like there can be so much more done for the people that maybe have already been, you know, succumbed to diseases than maybe what we're helping them with. And just the fact that doctors really don't have maybe the background in nutrition that we feel they should have. Not necessarily fault to their own, but that's just maybe not where their practice was going. And I think it's important that you're spreading this truth about the importance of the big pharma and the ways that we can combat it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh yeah, we can. I mean, we have to.
We have to. You're right. We do have to.
And I just, one way or the other.
We do. And you know, it's a easier thing to do when you think about all the people you care about in your life. And the ways you can help them.
Definitely.
So what's your view of like agriculture in the food system? Or maybe what's your hope for that?
I think that I mean, I just heard of this dude recently, this Alan Savory dude. You've probably heard of him.
Yeah.
That was like the most amazing, mind-blowing piece of information that you can actually just farm slightly differently. And it makes this amazing difference to the soil. It's been so degraded in our country. I mean, I think everybody needs to know that. I want that. I want the future to be where children can do things like Alan Savory have done, and all the people that have like reproduced what he's teaching and perfected it in their own little micro environment. I, the future has to be children being inspired to take that on themselves, and not just, you know, cattle ranching, but any form of like holistic farming, the way like Joe Salatin does, like integrated farming, whatever the word is for it.
Well, I agree, because my eyes have been open. I had no idea that my journey would also take me on understanding agricultural and soil health. Yeah, nothing's gonna happen, but here I am. And, you know, I know a lot more about that now, and it's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It starts with the soil. I forget. There was some like doctor that said that a long, long time ago.
Oh yeah, it absolutely does. So interesting tidbit that I thought was pretty cool. So you've done some work with the LA Lakers. Why don't you tell the listeners about that a little bit? Cause you know, everyone always loves to hear people who are working with sports teams.
Right. So, okay. So my husband thought it would be a great platform for us if I was working with the Los Angeles Lakers. And, you know, I was like, okay. But it was really actually a great ride. So I worked with them for six seasons, and I met some really amazing trainers and really amazing players who, you know, care about their, not just themselves and their careers, but also like the sustainability of the whole food system. And so that came about just because my husband said, hey, you know, I think there's some opportunities that you're missing in nutrition. And Gary Vee, who was the trainer at the time, he was super old school as far as like conservative about change. And what he recognized in our book was that it wasn't change. It wasn't a new latest fad. It was actually very scientifically based, because we were simply talking about cooking in a systematic way, that we actually divided up all of world cuisine into four components, which we call the four pillars of world cuisine. And, you know, that you can read about them in Deep Nutrition. I think they're actually even on the back cover of the book, if you just want to look at that. It's certainly in the table of contents. Anyway, he thought it made sense. And so we kind of completely revised what they were doing. They had been doing, you know, low fat and just chicken, not, you know, not beef, and not doing really the whole egg white omelets, and, you know, trying to minimize the use of butter and stuff like that. Even some margarine and stuff. They weren't necessarily doing the meat on the bone the way, actually the chef there, she was amazing. She was doing a little meat on the bone, just how she grew up, but she was still trying to follow their rules. But what when we came on board, we basically just gave her license to do what you did as a kid growing up in your family of nine girls, where you were the one in the kitchen feeding them all. And it was just, you know, traditional Mexican, and any traditional cuisine has got those four pillars built in.
That's amazing. And I think it's really cool just the amount of lives you've touched, and, you know, from your journey to, you know, the issues you were having with your knees to where you have come today and how many people you have helped along the way. Even me right here, you've really opened my eyes to more research I need to do on my body and for my children. And I'm very grateful to have this time to speak with you. You know, like most doctors, I might get the 7 to 12 minutes, but here I did get an hour of your time. And I feel very lucky to have spoken with you. But I do think that everyone should check out Deep Nutrition and check out the four pillars, and that, like I said, NBA athletes can benefit from that. Small children can benefit from that. And you can benefit from that. And I'm really excited. And I think people just need to be more informed about what's healthy, because we all want to do the right thing.
And I should mention this before we go, since the Lakers kind of haven't been super inspirational, but the Warriors have. Starting in season one, they copied what we were doing.
Really?
When I was working with them. So this was 2013.
That's amazing.
And a number of other teams like OKC and Villanova basketball and a bunch of soccer teams. And yeah, I mean, because like they don't need to consult with me, right? They can just read the books and copy what we're doing. So that's what's been happening.
And that's the amount of that's the kind of copying you want going on.
Oh, totally.
And I love that. So then you said that with a smile. You're like, yeah, they were copying it. And that's an exciting thing for you, because that's the one step closer to changing planet Earth.
Yeah, it would be nice if they said, hey, you guys, you want to do this too? Like, you know, what's helped us was this book, The Nutrition. Like, that would be nice. But I get to say it, and it's true.
You can say it out loud. Read Deep Nutrition.
Get a hold of it. Cares. The people in sports, like, they may even say that, but like the it gets cut out, right? Because who cares, right? Like, who cares what they're eating? They want to know what they're tweeting.
Isn't that the truth? Well, how can the listeners find you? Because I know they're going to be very fascinated listening to you today.
So I have a website, drkate.com, that's been around for a long time. There's a lot of information there already. And what I'm building out now as I work with this company is a YouTube channel. So if you Google, I think Dr. Kate Shanahan, the Dr. Kate and Chef Macy show, that's how you'll find the channel on YouTube. I guess you'll YouTube it. Is that Googling if it's...
It's a YouTube it, yeah. Google YouTube, you'll end up in the right spot.
Right. So there's not a lot of content there, but we are going to be creating like basically a culinary education course. And, you know, we're going to start with really simple and help people who are just at the beginning, or help anyone, like no matter where you are. These are going to be useful, helpful, simple shortcuts and simple, fast foods and just really great content. Hopefully. So they let me hire a chef here at ABC. So she's fantastic. And I can't wait to get started on these courses. So
I'm excited for that. People love course, especially on YouTube, when you can just find it when you're ready. I love that. That's another great way to get the information out. Thanks for doing that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us today here. And I cannot wait to even listen to the podcast back for myself and get through Deep Nutrition. But like you said, read it more than once, because you're going to find more and more ways to help your body. And that's the ultimate goal here.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. Bye.
We'd like to remind our audience that the views of our guests do not necessarily reflect the views of Biteable or of our staff personally. The purpose of the Biteable podcast is to encourage spirited dialogue around topics like food, nutrition, animal and human welfare, and the food system. Part of having an open and spirited dialogue is accepting that others have views that are different than ours and working to understand how their experiences have differed from our own. We encourage all listeners to do their own research on any and all topics discussed during the show. That being said, we hope you enjoyed the podcast, and thanks for listening.